This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Eaton Vance High Yield ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find smart bond selection from a specialized team with deep fixed income expertise. Get to know what's inside EVHY, the symbol of high yield done right, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
The U.S. and China agree to talk nukes. Plus, Senate Republicans butt heads over delays in confirming hundreds of military promotions. And JPMorgan Chase pulls a 180 as it pivots into European retail banking.
Up until a few years ago, Jamie Dimon said we're not doing retail overseas because we have to lease thousands of branches, we have to build out ATMs. But here's the key, the costs are now much lower if you do this as a digital-only bank.
It's Thursday, November 2nd. I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal, and here is the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The Biden administration is preparing to discuss nuclear arms control with China on Monday, according to U.S. officials. The rare discussion comes as Washington is seeking to prevent a three-way arms race with Beijing and Moscow, and it marks the first talks with China on the issue since the Obama presidency. For some context on these upcoming talks, I'm joined by Journal Asia security correspondent Alistair Gale. Alistair, per our report, U.S. officials are hoping to probe China about its growing nuclear stockpile. Tell us about that stockpile and how it's been viewed in Washington to date.
Well, what we've seen in recent years is a dramatic increase in the number of warheads that China has. And the latest estimate from the Pentagon is that China has around 500 warheads now, which is still 10 times less than the US and Russia, but it's accelerating the development of warheads, and it's projected to have over 1,000 warheads by the end of this decade. So it's suddenly emerged as the third nuclear power, and that is leading the US to feel concerned about what happens in terms of stability, what happens in terms of arms control talks, and how can it engage China to ensure that we don't have unforeseen events and we don't, God forbid, have a nuclear exchange.
The subtext there, though, seems to be that this could be about more than just averting a nuclear crisis, but potentially a matter of convenience for the U.S. if it can negotiate enough assurances to prevent it from having to embark on a costly refresh of its nuclear arsenal.
That's exactly right. The increasing Chinese arsenal obviously puts pressure on the U.S. because it has to think about how does it deter both Russia and China. And with two rivals, it's a much more complex problem. And the fear is that with China increasing its stockpile, U.S. may have to increase its own stockpile. We've just had a report from a congressional committee saying that the U.S. should increase its number of warheads and its range of nuclear weapons. So you lead to a situation where the U.S. has to respond. So the ideal situation for the U.S. would be to try and stop this development by China. But that's not something that they've had any success in doing because China's not willing to talk so far.
And to that end, Alistair, what have the Chinese said about these talks and the broader issues at play here?
Well, essentially, China has said nothing about these upcoming talks. It's not confirmed them. This is all our own reporting from the U.S. side. The Chinese, when you raise questions with them about nuclear weapons, they say very little. They say they have a minimum deterrent. They say that they have a much smaller nuclear arsenal than even, you know, European countries like the UK and France. And so they're not the party that the U.S. needs to worry about. So when it comes to engaging the Chinese, so far, there's not been much progress.
That was Wall Street Journal Asia security correspondent Alistair Gale. Alistair, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Meanwhile, a debate over American military readiness has spilled into public view in the U.S. Senate. At issue, the confirmation of at least 378 generals and admirals whose promotions have been on hold since February. Alabama Republican Tommy Tuberville is delaying the confirmations until the Pentagon ends a policy providing funding for troops to receive reproductive health care, including abortion. And in a contentious meeting last night, he objected to each of the 61 promotions that his colleagues requested. Tuberville said his tactics weren't affecting military readiness, but a number of Republicans stood up to disagree, including Alaska's Dan Sullivan, a colonel in the Marine Corps Reserve.
By the way, Xi Jinping is watching this right now going, I can't believe they're not letting these guys command. He's loving this. So is Putin. They're loving it. How dumb can we be, man?
Among the officers that Sullivan and other Republicans tried unsuccessfully to promote last night were the admirals nominated to command a pair of carrier strike groups sent to the Middle East after Hamas's attack on Israel and to help oversee all U.S. military operations in the region. And speaking of the Hamas-Israel war, President Biden has reiterated calls for a humanitarian pause in the conflict to allow aid into Gaza and hostages held by Hamas to get out. However, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has ruled out a ceasefire, saying that Israeli operations in Gaza are putting pressure on Hamas to consider hostage releases. As fighting continues, the UN reports that about 700,000 displaced people are now taking refuge in its facilities across Gaza, and that 70 of its workers have been killed since Israel began its bombardment of the territory. And we want to know what questions you've got about the war between Israel and Hamas, whether it's about the fighting on the ground or how it's reverberating around the world. Send us a note, or even better, record us a voice memo on your phone and send it to wnpod@wsj.com. That's wnpod@wsj.com. And just be sure to include your name and location because we might use it on the show. Coming up, why Jamie Dimon changed his mind on Europe. Plus, the DOJ probes Live Nation's deals with musicians and concert venues. We've got those stories and more after the break.
This spot is brought to you by Eaton Vance, the symbol of advanced investing. What's inside your ETF? With Eaton Vance High Yield ETF, you know. Inside, you'll find smart bond selection from a specialized team with deep fixed income expertise. Get to know what's inside EVHY, the symbol of high yield done right, at eatonvance.com/symbols. Before investing, prospective investors should carefully consider the investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. The current prospectus contains this and other information and is available at eatonvance.com. Read the prospectus carefully before investing. Not FDIC insured. Offer no bank guarantee. May lose value. Not insured by any federal government agency. Not a deposit. Investments involve risk. Principal loss is possible. Distributed by Foreside Fund Services, LLC.
To banking now, JP Morgan Chase is making a major bet on the UK and preparing to launch in other European countries, despite Chief Executive Jamie Dimon insisting just a few years ago that the Wall Street giant would never get into retail banking in Europe. And it also comes as banking reporter Josh Mitchell writes that rivals like Goldman Sachs and Citi have been generally retreating from retail. Josh, tell us, what are the opportunities that JP Morgan sees here?
Well, first of all, it's important to know that there are a lot of consumers in Europe and the UK. This is the sixth largest economy in the world. And then if you look at some of the big economies in Europe, there are consumers and they have cash to spend, they have cash to put in the bank. And so if you just look at the fundamentals, this is a pretty wealthy part of the world that JP Morgan is trying to tap into. You also take a look at JP Morgan's balance sheet. They have a lot of cash that they can play with here. They've been raking in profits in recent years. They've done well in retail banking in the US, and so they're trying to figure out what comes next for us. And so they see an opportunity in Europe and the UK because they think they can essentially start from scratch here.
And so what is the precise roadmap here? Are they hiring? Which countries are we talking about here? And what's the timeline for all of this?
Okay, so there's kind of two things going on here. First is they started to expand in the UK just 2 years ago. They bought this company called Nutmeg, which is a financial advisory company online. But then they also opened Chase UK, which basically is just an app. There's no branches. But Chase UK allows consumers to deposit cash into checking and savings accounts. Eventually, they want to start offering loans to these consumers in the UK, and they want to start offering credit cards. They haven't said yet whether they want to go into the mortgage business. But the idea here is that they do want to be a full-service retail bank in the UK. They have about 2 million customers as of now, about 15 billion pounds in deposits. So that's step one. Step two is they've been hiring dozens of people in Berlin, from software engineers to customer service reps. And these people are preparing for Chase to launch in multiple markets in Europe. They have not said which markets those will be, but they're trying to set up a so-called continental headquarters in Berlin, where they're going to prepare to launch digital-only retail banks in multiple markets in Europe over the next 18 months.
And Josh, I'll say, you and I are both in London. I don't know about you, but I never signed up with a physical bank when I moved here. I'm 100% digital. So maybe this is the right place, the right time for JP Morgan to give this a shot.
Yeah, it was actually probably the first thing that I took note of when I moved here last year was that not only are there fewer branches here, but on top of that, most consumers here, I'm sure you've seen, use their cell phones to charge things. They don't even carry around cards. So even though we've seen this trend in the US, that trend is even more accelerated in the UK and Europe.
Though there are risks here too, not just existing competition in some of these countries, but just having to operate in so many different jurisdictions.
Yeah, I think that is such a good point. And they're obviously a U.S. bank. They've been in retail for a while in the U.S. They've done well in the U.S. They know the U.S. extremely well. One of the big risks here is that they're going to go into Europe and they're just not going to be familiar with all of the different intricacies of these different countries. I was talking to an analyst who said, look, if you go into the Italian retail market, it's actually pretty hard, for example, to repossess a house when a consumer falls behind on their mortgage in that country. And so that's one risk here. But here's the key. This is the thing that JP Morgan and Jamie Dimon himself have said. The costs are now much lower from their perspective if you do this as a digital-only bank. JP Morgan analyzed the financial documents of startup challenger banks here in the UK and determined that the cost per customer of these banks that are digital-only banks is about a half to a third of what the bigger established traditional banks in the UK pay per customer. So if you can lower those costs, they're kind of saying, look, the risk is low enough that if we fail here, it's not going to be a huge cost. And by the way, there's a lot of potential upside here.
That was Wall Street Journal banking reporter Josh Mitchell. Josh, thanks so much for bringing us this story.
Yeah, sure. Thanks.
Europe's most valuable company, Novo Nordisk, has reported a 56% rise in its third quarter earnings, boosted by blockbuster weight loss drugs Wegovy and Ozempic. The pharma giant said it is gradually expanding production, but that it will continue to restrict the supply of lower strength doses of Wegovy in the United States to safeguard supplies for current patients. Meanwhile, oil giant Shell has announced another share buyback after earnings got a boost from higher oil prices. Senior energy correspondent Jenny Strasberg has more.
We're off the record profits of 2022. But shareholders are still very much show me the money. The expectations for sustained high oil prices are definitely out there. And you've seen a bit of a bifurcation of expectations of what oil majors are best positioned to take advantage of that. BP got downgraded earlier this week by, for instance, JP Morgan, with the idea that Shell and Total in France are better positioned to take advantage of higher oil prices. So that's going to be a driver going forward for sure.
And the earnings bonanza will continue later today with Apple due to report after the U.S. market close. Disney is offering at least $8.6 billion for Comcast's stake in Hulu. The fate of the streaming service has been in question since Disney acquired 21st Century Fox's entertainment assets in 2019, a deal that gave Disney majority control of Hulu. Disney said the bid reflects the floor of what Comcast is owed for Hulu after Comcast exercised its option to sell its minority stake. And Deputy Media Editor Jessica Tunkel told us that tough negotiations are expected to follow.
Every expectation is that Comcast will drive a hard bargain in this negotiation. Comcast CEO Brian Roberts, he's known to be a very tough negotiator. They're making it very clear how they see this company should be valued. They're reminding Disney that they have to value the service just as if they were going to sell it out in an auctions and there'd be competing bids. So I would anticipate this to be a drawn out process and pretty complicated.
We are exclusively reporting that the Justice Department is probing Live Nation's tactics when booking venues and top talent to play at those venues. The antitrust investigation is reportedly focusing on how Live Nation books artists at venues that it owns and that use its Ticketmaster service, with rivals arguing that customers ultimately pay more for tickets as a result of that market dominance. Live Nation President Joe Berchtold said in September that he believed the department was looking into certain business practices at the company rather than questioning its fundamental business model and seeking a breakup of Live Nation and Ticketmaster. A Justice Department spokeswoman declined to comment. And summer fun is consolidating, with the Journal learning that theme park operators Six Flags and Cedar Fair are merging in a roughly $2 billion deal. The combined company will have 27 amusement parks and 15 water parks across the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, with the deal meant to lend it the scale and resources needed to compete with SeaWorld, Disney, and Comcast Universal. And that is What's News for Thursday morning. Today's show was produced by Kate Bullivant. Our supervising producer is Sandra Kilhoff, and I'm Luke Vargas for The Wall Street Journal. We will be back tonight with a new show. Until then, thanks for listening.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.